You're listening to the Literally Katrina podcast with your host, Katrina Sklepowicz, live from Winnipeg. This is Winnipeg's podcast series about book reviews, author interviews, and literary news. Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Thanksgiving edition of the Literally Katrina podcast. I hope you all had a lovely long weekend full of friends, family, and lots of food. I am incredibly thankful for all of you, my dedicated audience. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. As a token of my appreciation, you may remember that I am giving away a copy of Giller Prize-winning author Elizabeth Hay's new novel, His Whole Life. I will be announcing the winner at the end of today's podcast episode. It could be you, you never know, so make sure you listen through straight to the end. So, today I'm going to walk you through a few things. First off, we're going to chat about amazing new releases that I cannot wait to get my hands on. Then I'm going to recommend a pre-election read, because if you live in Canada, our federal election is only a week away, so that's exciting. After that little treat, we're going to listen in on an interview I did with local author Armin Wiebe. And finally, I'll announce the winner of the first Literally Katrina book giveaway. Yay! So to start things off, TBR. 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 What does that mean? To be read. This weekend was my dad's birthday. Lucky guy, he gets Thanksgiving and birthday celebrations all in one. And I, of course, gifted him with a book, because that's what I do. Because we're both fans of Game of Thrones and George R. R. Martin's gory yet fantastic world of Westeros, I got my dad A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which was released this month. It's set a century before the Game of Thrones stories are written in, and it is a compilation of three prequel novellas about two unlikely heroes, Dunk and Egg. It's also illustrated, so that's exciting. We rarely read illustrated books in my house, so I was pretty excited to get that to my dad. As much as I wish this book was the final installment of Game of Thrones, which we've been waiting for a long time, this should tide me over until Martin releases it, hopefully sometime in spring 2016. So that was my dad's birthday present, even though it's also a little bit of a present to myself. One of my favorite authors, Kate Morton, who wrote The Forbidden Garden, which is one of the best books I've ever read, is coming out with her fifth book on October 20th called The Lake House. If you haven't read one of Morton's books yet, you should. They're amazing. They have a really nice Jane Austen vibe mixed with the Bronte sisters. So it's a little bit eerie. They're a little bit dark, but they're also pretty fantastic. And in typical Morton fashion, the Lake House weaves together the past and present, bringing together two characters across time and place to solve a mystery. And they're like the perfect fall read. There's kind of that gloominess that comes with fall, and I really like reading some Morton books during this time. So I'm really excited to read it. Keep your eyes out for that one. It comes out on October 20th. In a crazy twist of events, to celebrate the 10-year anniversary of the most loved and scorned teen novels of all time, Twilight, author Stephenie Meyer released an anniversary edition with an attached gender-bent version this week called Life and Death. What? What is that? What does gender-bent mean? Meyer rewrote the story, switching out the genders for each character, with Bella the human as Beau the male human, and Edward the vampire as Edith the female vampire. Don't even get me started on this unfortunate name choice. But anyways, Meyer did this apparently to prove that the storyline of Twilight is feminist and that Bella isn't just a dumb teen girl in distress. So as much as Twilight has probably been beaten to death at this point with the movies and the books and then the graphic novel and then Midnight Sun, which is the story from Edward's point of view, I will admit that I kind of want to read this one. I really want to read it. However, you can only purchase a copy of Life and Death with a copy of Twilight. Cleverly, it's being sold as a package deal in one giant book right now. So until Life and Death is available as a standalone copy, I don't really see me buying it because I don't really need another copy of Twilight. So no reviews to come yet. Also, if you were keeping up with my blog over the summer, you would have seen my rave reviews of Emily St. John Mandel's book, Station 11, which is like this amazing apocalyptic book. It's very dystopic, but it's realistic. It's set in Ontario. Everything's really real. That is what really piqued my interest in a new novel coming out right now called Gold Fame Citrus by Claire V. Watkins, and it's a similarly dystopic read. It's getting a lot of attention online, as BuzzFeed Books reviewer Lincoln Thompson wrote, "It's so deliciously devastatingly good, I want to melt it down and sip it through a straw, then rip the straw out and just splash it all over my face." So, I don't know if that sounds good or bad to you, but it certainly makes me want to read it. Like, what an odd thing to say about a book, but that has gotten my interest. It's set in California after a devastating apocalyptic drought, beware climate change, and this novel is apparently an intoxicating wonder to behold, and that just sounds amazing, so it's definitely on my list. And finally, I just purchased a copy of Sloane Crosley's The Clasp, which is getting celebrity endorsements left, right, and center. It's also on the top of every hot fall reads list, from Time to Vanity Fair to Harper's Bazaar and the Huffington Post. It's a mystery dramedy treasure hunt with a love triangle and adventure. It's like it was written for me because I love all those things mixed into one. Honestly, I can't wait. So those are the five books on my TBR pile right now. What's on yours? Have you got any recommendations for me? Post in the comments on my blog, send me a tweet, or get at me on Facebook with the books on your TBR pile because I love hearing from you. Okay, now moving on to a more pressing issue, the Canadian federal election. It's happening Monday, October 19th, so just a week away from today. Now, I did advance voting this weekend, so I'm good to go, but if you're still on the fence with who to vote for, or if you've been confused by all those wedge issues that have been tossed around over this super long campaign, worry not. There's still plenty of time to do some research and find out where you sit. I recommend CBC Vote Compass or the I Side With Canadian Election Quiz. Both are really useful and really help me decide which way I should be voting. And if you want to go a little bit more in depth, I highly recommend Jeff Rubin's The Carbon Bubble, What Happens to Us When It Bursts. Now, I've written about it before for several different blogs, but it is truly a great analysis of where we're at, where we're going, and I really recommend it. Jeff Rubin's a Canadian economist and author, and he runs through exactly where we are with the environment and the economy, and those are two huge topics in this election. While Rubin certainly has a specific stance and rights-leaning to one side to make his arguments, this was such an informative read for me. Honestly, I don't typically stray into nonfiction very often, especially books about the economy. That's just not my forte. But Rubin's writing is clear and accessible and witty. So even for someone with their limited economic knowledge, I mean, I only took global political economy in university 5 years ago. This was pretty easy to understand. And if you're at all concerned about the environment, and I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that you probably should be, this is a critical read and super relevant with the election coming up. All right, enough about politics. Now we're going to listen in on an interview I did with local author Armin Wiebe, and you're in for a treat. We talk about Low German, Mennonites, and pierogies. Gosh, that sounds like my Thanksgiving. Just kidding, sorta. We love Mennonites in my house. Anyways, let's take a listen. So with me is Armin Wiebe, a former Cree Comm instructor, I've been told, and we're at the Red River College atrium. Mm-hmm. And you used to teach here.
Yes, I did. I was part of the first group that taught in this building.
That's awesome.
2002.
2002. That's awesome. It's a great building.
Yes, it is.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Okay, I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. So the Writers Festival, the Winnipeg International Writers Festival, is launching this Friday, mm-hmm. September 18th, and you are a part of it. I know that you're speaking here, and you're speaking in Brandon.
Yes.
Can you tell me about Armin Shorts, the book that you're promoting?
Well, it's a collection of short stories that I've written over the last almost 40 years.
Okay, so, you're a collector.
Yeah, so there's some very old stories and some brand new stories that nobody's had a chance to read before.
So, that's awesome.
Yes.
And you have a pretty famous character named Yash. And yes. Does he make some appearances in Armin's Shorts?
Yes, there are two stories that he narrates.
Okay. And I'm sure for your readers it's great to have that familiar voice back.
Well, I imagine there are some readers who are looking to hear more of him.
And what inspired Yash? I'm from the Mennonite community as well, and everyone has an Uncle Yash.
Oh,
so
yes.
I love that you chose that name.
Well, interestingly enough, I never actually knew any Yashes. I
no.
heard about them.
You heard about them.
I heard about them.
I don't
them
know any Yashes
but
either.
I didn't know any personally, so so I thought that was a good enough name to use.
And what inspired Gutenthal, which is the town you often set your novels in?
Well, I needed to call the community something, and Gutenthal seemed like a village that I'd never actually heard of, so...
There probably is one in Germany or Austria, but not here in Manitoba.
Yes, and because so many of the villages had Tal at the end of it, because...
Means valley.
Yes, why everybody in the valley, but...
Good then, valley, Gutenthal.
And then the Bergtals, which is mountain valley, which is
again... Yep, very, very literal. Germans often are very literal.
Yes.
Let's call it what it is. Uh-huh. Stinktier is stinky animal. That's a skunk.
Yes.
Let's just call it what it is.
Yes.
So that's great. What inspired you to write about the Mennonite community? There's characters in there, that's for sure.
Well, I had been away from that world for about 10 years, and then I took a job teaching on a Hutterite colony, and this was right at the same time that I was getting serious about writing, and so here I was surrounded by this German-English kind of dialect, and it made me think about my roots, and so I decided to see if I could write in that vein, and one thing led to another.
And I'm sure there are a lot of similarities between the Hutterite community and the Mennonite community, depending on which Mennonite group we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
My family comes from pretty liberal suburban Mennonites,
oh,
so
yes.
They go to folk fest, they might drink a little, just not at church. And then Hutterites would be a little more separatist and a little more conservative, but these still have a good time.
Yeah, and if you've ever been to a Hutterite wedding, then drinking beer and singing hymns is a whole other experience to have.
And, you know, Mennonites and Hutterites have really on-point four-part harmony, so I can't imagine what the beer really does to it. So, did you grow up in Winnipeg?
No, I grew up around Altona.
Okay.
That area between Altona and Winkler, that region.
The rich Mennonite region.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a whole bunch of them.
Grew up
surrounded by Friesens and Clausens and...
Yes.
Yeah. And Weebs.
Yes, lots of Weebs.
Do you have lots of relatives that still live there?
Some. Like most other families.
You're spread out.
They're spread out, and families have migrated to the city and to other areas as the culture changed and agriculture changed and rural depopulation and all that, so.
Well, I love Altona. I really like Winkler too, but my favorite spot is Morden.
Oh, yes.
I went to the Morden graduation as a guest one time, and I felt like I was the cool city kid at the Mennonite grad.
Oh.
So that was very fun for me, but great area.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work at a summer camp near Boise of Ane.
Oh, yes.
So I spent a lot of my summers in southern Manitoba.
Uh-huh.
With a whole lot of Mennonites, and
I
feel like it's my second home sometimes, and
mm-hmm.
I miss it. Although North Kildonan is like Steinbach in Winnipeg, so everyone knows everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. And you will be doing a few different events during the festival to talk about Armin Shorts. Can you tell me about the different events you're going to be doing?
Well, on Tuesday next week, I'll be doing a nooner at the library.
Awesome.
At 12:15 in the Carol Shields Auditorium. And then Tuesday evening, I'll be on the main stage at the main stage event at Thin Air.
Excellent. The main stage is the big deal, so I'm
mm-hmm.
sure that'll be exciting.
Yes, that'll be exciting. And then on Wednesday, I have to get up early and head off to Brandon so I can meet a university class at Brandon University. I mean, it's open to the public as well, but that's where it's going to be. And then in the afternoon, I'll be doing a writing workshop at 3:30 at Brandon University. Yes.
So when you teach those workshops, what do you like to focus on? And I believe you were a creative writing instructor for the Creative Communications Program, correct?
Yes, I was.
Okay. So you really know what you're talking about.
Well,
well, we hope so.
Well, the workshop I'm going to be doing in Brandon is a one way to get started workshop. So
okay.
I think when I meet people who say they would like to write, and the big problem often seems to be getting started, getting something going.
Right.
So that's what my workshop will be. It won't be a high-level master class for people that have been writing for 30 years, but for people who just want to have some fun and get started, because ultimately you always have to get back to the having the fun and playing and getting something new going.
So work can also be fun.
Yes, it has to be. otherwise it gets rather, can get very, you can get into a serious rut if you lose the fun of it.
And is writing fun for you still?
Yes, it is.
That's good.
Not always, but yes, it's
writer's
still fun.
Block can be a bit of a challenge sometimes.
Yes, and there's no solution other than to write yourself out of it. So
yeah, even if you have nothing to write about,
that's
it's
right.
Just you got to do it.
Sometimes that's when the best stuff happens, when you get your editor and your critic shut off and you think, oh, I can't do anything good anyway, but I will do something, and then all of a sudden interesting things start happening.
That's so awesome. And you've written these short stories over 40 years, so you definitely know that you don't always have to write the big series. You don't always have to write the epic novel. Sometimes you can just gather these little great short stories and then compile them one day into a nice little compilation.
Yes.
and then you don't have to worry about, does this fit together? Because not every story fits together.
No.
And not every character will actually meet that other character. If you're looking at their trajectories, you're going, you won't meet that guy.
No.
And what inspires you to keep writing?
Well, I don't know, once you get the writing bug, it never leaves you, even if you never write again. I think people that have had the bug and had the experience of writing, and then even though life takes over and seems to keep you from writing, there's always that
something
back
that
of your
brings
mind
you back.
You want, people still want to write, and I think that's a dangerous path.
A bit dangerous. But you get to go to cool things like the Writers' Festival.
Yes.
You get to do a little bit of partying, I guess, with
yes.
your job.
Oh, yes.
And do you book tours as well?
Yes, I've, over my
career,
I've gone to places I wouldn't have gone otherwise if it hadn't been for writing and being invited to places that I wouldn't have gone on
otherwise.
My own.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really neat.
Yeah.
And when you write, do you find it's kind of therapeutic, or it's almost something that you just got to get out? It's not therapeutic, it's not cathartic, it's just, I have a story in my head and it needs to be on paper.
Well, writing can be therapeutic, but I don't think you need that excuse.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be therapy in order to justify the time you put into something. It can be, but writing for therapy is something different than
writing for fun,
writing for creating a story or creating art and and so on. So, but I mean, that is a question that often gets asked, because there's the suspicion that you might be doing something that's frivolous. But if you are doing it for therapy, then that's justified.
It's got a purpose then, yeah.
Or for church, you know.
And I know that with the names like Yash and things like that, that's a pretty much low German, am
yes,
I right?
Yes, that's right.
Did you grow up speaking low German at home?
Oh, yes. I was a rare kid in the sense that I grew up speaking all three languages because my father was a teacher and my parents had grown up in a more English neighborhood.
So you did German, English, and low German at home.
Yes, and so... it was unusual for a kid that wasn't going to school yet to be speaking English.
For sure. And especially in that community.
In that community. So yes, I...
Had an advantage.
Yes, so and most of my first 18 years were spent living outside of town. So I was fluent. I mean, in the 60s, early 60s, I mean... Teenagers are still speaking low German socially out
yes.
in the country. In town, not so much. But then television arrived and so on. And so within 6 years or so, all that had changed.
Yeah, and I know with my friends' families, I never learned low German, mm-hmm. just high German in school.
Mm-hmm.
But for my friends whose families did speak low German, they don't speak it anymore. They mm-hmm. only speak it when they're talking to their grandparents, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And then their parents either speak English or mm-hmm. high German at home. And it makes me sad a little bit that maybe low German's dying in Manitoba to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a written dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So it could quickly disappear.
Yes, I mean, there are some books written in the language, I mean, but it didn't really happen until 1982, before I published my novels. A bunch of professors got together and worked out a writing system that would be consistent.
Oh, that's great. So that was here in Manitoba.
But I mean, that was too late for me, and I had invented all my own spellings and so on.
Right, and it's pretty phonetic, right? We're going off how it sounds.
Yeah, that's what my intention was, you know. Because if I had spelled Yash with a J, everybody would have been joshing
him. Yep, everyone would have called him Josh.
So,
and actually, with the Y is how I've only ever seen it spelled.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Even though it, probably in German, we would have put a J.
Yeah.
But I've always seen it with my friends. It's Uncle Yash, middle Y.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I've had professors who you'd think would be true to a text. You know, write about it and change the Y to a J.
Oh, nitpicking now.
Nitpicking,
that's what
yes.
they're doing. That's great.
Yeah.
Do you still speak low German or it doesn't come as naturally anymore?
I rarely speak the language. I just haven't lived in a milieu where
it's needed.
Where other people. I mean, even when I go see when I visit with my mother and we're all alone, we don't remember to speak German.
Do you speak English with your mom then?
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
Sure. So, I mean, sometimes some low German words slip in, you know, we do it, but.
Sometimes there just is no other word in English to say what you're thinking.
I mean, when she gets together with her friends, I'm sure they still speak low German. But, you know, it's just that transition has been, it's been so long.
Yeah, I'm sure. Even for me, I stopped speaking German after grade 12 because mm-hmm. that's when I finished the bilingual program.
Yeah.
And even though I've since been back to Germany twice, it's only when I'm there that I remember my grammar. And I'm like, oh, right, I got to put the verb somewhere else. And,
yeah.
oh, that's not the word you should be using.
Yeah.
I gotta, and you remember the rules. But here, my sister and I slip it into casual conversation sometimes because it's the only word that fits.
Yeah.
And all my friends grew up speaking German, but we don't speak it to each other.
And even in Germany, the Germans don't let you talk.
No.
German.
they want to practice their English.
They want to practice their English.
And their English is often better than our German is. Like
yes.
if we're looking at that, their system for teaching languages is far superior to ours.
Yeah.
And I love that they learn British English. Uh-huh. So when you're there and you're talking to them and they want to practice, they talk about their trousers and the corridor, and you're going, oh, your pants are in the hallway. Oh! And they're going, what do you mean? So there's that little bit of a difference, and I love that, kind of teaching them Canadian slang. And I would also invent my own German words. I didn't like saying Entschuldigung when I wanted to say sorry, and it's such a Canadian thing to say I'm sorry.
Yes.
And so I had to say Schuldi. And then they were like, that's not a real word. And I'm like, you get it.
Yes,
it's a shortened version of sorry, because Entschuldigung is just too many letters. And I feel like that's where a lot of Low German words came from, is just going, it's what we say.
Yes, yes. I mean, the pure Low German, even I didn't learn that, because it was all, so many English words were
mixed in there,
and just the pronunciation changed a little.
And it, per family or per town, and it changes.
Oh yeah. I mean, even within the community, one family would speak differently from another.
Oh, yeah. Yep, that's for sure. I love it. And maybe I'll find like a Low German tutor for my children in the future. But at least for now, you can still learn German in schools here, and all the way to your, at least a bachelor's degree in Slavic studies, but I don't think you can do a master's here anymore in language. I'd have to look that up. I should know this. I've got my sister and best friend are both German teachers.
Oh, yeah.
So I should know.
Yeah, I really never even occurred to me whether there were
higher education.
U of M had a master's program back when I was in university. Well, my first year German professor wasn't German.
Oh.
He was English.
Okay.
Or Canadian. And he had found his soul in German, in the German language.
And without any heritage, he just went, this is a good language.
Yeah, that's a good language. So he was, he kind of looked down on us Southern Manitoba types who
bastardized the language.
Yeah,
oh no.
We just got along on Sprachgefühl rather than actually knowing the grammar rules and so on.
I feel like some of that, how it comes naturally, is the proper grammar. That is how it should be. Mm-hmm. So when you turn your German brain on, or your second language brain, and you start to think in that language, mm-hmm. it does come by feel sometimes.
Yes.
And know that, well, that should go here. And,
yes.
and you don't actually think about it, you just say it. And what I found was really funny when I learned German, we learned a lot of literal translations. So, mm-hmm. I love you was Ich liebe dich. And that's what we always wrote in our cards. And it wasn't until I was 17, living in Germany, when they said, no, that's a different kind of love. You actually don't say that casually. You should be saying, Hab dich lieb. I have love for you.
Yes.
And you're thinking, what? Why have I never learned this until now?
Because we're not that passive here.
No, we're not that passive. We're a little more active, and that's a good thing in creative writing.
Yeah.
We want always to have active voice.
Well, there's advantages to knowing German, because it's related to so many other languages.
Absolutely.
I mean, when I was watching... The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo movies.
Swedish. Very similar, hey?
I could understand. I mean, I watched it a second time without the
subtitles,
and I was getting most of it.
That's awesome. Yeah, and
it wasn't that different. I mean, a little bit of a stretch, but.
Yeah, and they use the umlaut, so like, there's some pronunciation that even if you maybe don't know what the word means, mm-hmm. you can probably say it when you read it.
Yeah.
I noticed that when I was in South Africa, Afrikaans, being from a Dutch background,
mm-hmm.
Is really similar to German as well. So I remember meeting some Afrikaners going, oh, like, you're Canadian. And I'm going, oh, well, I just speak German. And they're going, well, that's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird that you get this language. And I didn't know what I was saying. But if they said, say this, and I repeated back, my pronunciation was pretty good, so that's fun.
Yeah, I noticed that in reading Myra Cook's novels, like The House and Sugarbush Road.
And I just finished Night Watching.
Oh yeah, so did I. I just finished it the other day.
It's pretty heartbreaking, isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, she didn't use quite as much Afrikaans in this novel as in the other one.
True.
But I could, most of the time, I could get yes. what the word meant because it was similar to the other German and Dutch and so on. And
it really is.
I mean, my name goes back to Holland. And you know, when my first wife was of Ukrainian background, and they said pierogies, and I said Veronica, and they knew what I meant.
Exactly. Well, my dad sometimes calls it Petahe.
Yeah, Petahe is actually the proper Ukrainian. Pierogi is Polish, I think.
Yes. Yep. And the spelling change varies. I've seen
yes.
it in cookbooks. Mm-hmm. There'll be 5 different recipes, and they're all for the same food. But some of them are Veronica, some of them are pierogi, some of them are pierogis, some of them are petahe, and you're going, but which dough do I want? So what's in store next for you? You've released Armin's Shorts, that came out on September 3rd.
Yes.
And you're going to be promoting that for a while. Mm-hmm. Are you working on anything right now?
Well, I've got a couple of things that I need to get back to now once...
You put some projects on hold for a little while?
Well, yes. Well, that's part of the process of you publish something and then you have to relive it for a while you promote it.
Yes, that's true.
So I've got a novel that I need to rewrite. I've got a few plays that I need to write. And
Oh, wow. So we're going to see a lot more from you in the coming years.
I hope so.
That's awesome. Well, I wish you the best of luck with your upcoming projects, but also with the festival and your short story book. I can't wait to read about Yash. I've never read a story yet about him, so I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Something lacking in your Mennonite education if you didn't read Yash yet.
I know, I'm thinking that should be part of the curriculum. I'll make sure to pitch it to my German teaching friends.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
I really love chatting with Armin right before the Writers' Festival, and I hope that some of you had a chance to go out and see him during the festival, which took place in late September. I know I enjoyed the events I had a chance to go see, as you know, because I talked about them already on the podcast, but it was great to chat with Armin, and I hope you enjoyed our interview as well. And now it's the time you've all been waiting for. It's time to announce the winner of the first ever Literally Katrina book giveaway. Drawn randomly from the pool of contestants, the winner is... Matthew Kreider! Congrats, Matthew! Yay! For all of you that didn't win, have no fear. There will be more book giveaways in the future, so you can look forward to that. Coming up in episode 4, we'll be chatting with author Leslie Crew about her new book, Amazing Grace, which I finished reading a few weeks ago, and it's phenomenal. And then I have a few other exciting book things in store for you, so make sure you take a listen. Thanks again for tuning into the Literally Katrina podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes, follow the Literally Katrina page on Facebook, and follow me on Twitter at LitKatrina for more bookish fun. And please give my podcast a rating on iTunes if you get a chance. That really helps the podcast gain visibility, and the more book lovers I can reach, the better. Happy Thanksgiving, all!